great future. We're talking real money.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on Talking Real Money. I'm Tom Koch. Don McDonald has the well-earned day off today. So we're going to do something that we do infrequently. We try to do regularly, and that is answer a lot of your questions, how we get a lot. So I'm going to apologize up front that we do not answer all of them. We do our best. Don does the audio questions every Friday. Don and I try to do a few of the questions in our other programs, but I thought today we'd do something a little bit different. I'll be the answer man, and I'll bring in one of our great advisors. Her name is Roxy Butner, and she joins us here in the Talking Real Money studio. Roxy, thank you for doing this.
Hey,
and
Tom.
Putting yourself out on the line here, and because a lot of people think I don't want to be that person. But you've
thanks
been
for having me.
No,
it's fun.
Yeah, and Roxy does a great job for our clients. You can see her on our website if you want to learn more about her, of course. But thrilled to have her being part of the show. So, and as usual, we want to answer your questions. So you can go to talkingrealmoney.com anytime and ask them. You can write them in. You can, as I say, record the audio. Don uses those. And for those of you who want the more personal attention, you can call us Saturdays between noon and 2 Pacific time. That is 3 to 5 Eastern time at 800-386-3004 and ask us questions there. So we're happy to take those any way you like. So, but let's take a few of these today, Roxy. I've got a topic for you, too, that I'm going to put you on the spot with as well. So what do we got? What are people asking about?
So we've got a few questions here. The first one is from David in Homewood, Alabama. He says, Tom and Don, I have two questions for you, and thanks for your work. What do you think about a total world stock market index fund as a complete portfolio for someone in the mid to late 30s? I'm a married physician with a wife and three kids. I make about $350,000 per year and save a little over $100,000 per year, including the employer match, across my 403B, my 457, backdoor Roth IRAs, two of them, and an HSA. We have a $40,000 emergency fund, a $700,000 portfolio, and a $550,000 mortgage. Do you think I need to get any more complicated, or do you think a total world stock market index fund is appropriate? I have really great funds available to me and have a weighted expense ratio of about 0.04%. My risk quiz score is 86, and I doubled my investments during the COVID downturn.
Wow, David, that's an absolutely great question, spot on. And first of all, 86 on the risk score is very high. I don't know how many of those you see.
Mm-mm,
I don't see very many people in their 80s. So that is a high score, which suggests, yes, you can take the risk, but also suggests some understanding about markets, because part of that risk quiz, which any of us can go take any day. I haven't taken one in a while. Maybe I should do it just to see what my score is today. It gets higher as the market does well, and then it gets lower as the market doesn't do well because we don't feel as safe. But this question comes up quite a bit. Like, hey, why can't I just put it all in a couple of index funds and be okay? And let me give you my take, and I'll ask Roxy for hers, David, because here's the deal. When you're making $350,000 a year and you've saved $700,000, there's some complexity to that, both in terms of the asset allocation, the asset location, and the tax aspect of your overall situation. Here's what I think you should do, because you're going to be a big earner. It's great. You've got these kids as well. Terrific. Married. And there's various places you're saving. I think you should at least get partial professional help just to look at your situation, to do a little planning, because that will help you decide where you're going to put the money, and then asset allocation and asset location. For example, in the Roth, I would be tempted, and I use this in my own Roth, to concentrate on things that have gone up faster than the general market. For example, U.S. small cap value, for and emerging markets value. I might want to have that in my Roth, because the expectation is, if history is a guide, that will make more than just a general market kind of portfolio. Part two, when you've saved $700,000, I kind of draw the line at $500,000, that after that, you really should have a more sophisticated portfolio, which would include some of the factors, small value, quality, some of those other things that have added a little bit of return over time. And then for you, again, the fact that you're a big earner, is you need probably somebody to look at the taxation of all this. Where do you want to save? You're in a great spot because you have all these years of saving. where do you want to save that? Should you make an emphasis on saving money post-tax that grows at a taxable type brokerage account that'll only be pulled out of capital gains tax rates, which have been traditionally lower than regular income tax rates? Or should you be, you know, paying more of that tax today and putting it in Roth? Or should you be splitting it between Roth and IRA? A good planner is going to help you make those decisions moving forward. That's why, yes, I think there's two parts to this. I think there is getting some professional advice because, as I said, you're making a lot of money and you've already saved a fair amount, and then considering getting some professional help on the backside for the actual asset allocation and asset location. But what would you talk to a lot of people. What would you tell David in this situation?
Well, I think it's interesting because people kind of just say total world stock market index fund. But there's also a question of which total world stock market index fund, because a Vanguard index fund compared to an Avantis or an iShares, you know, they could be very, very different. So I don't know exactly what you have available to you, but that's one of the first things that I would look at. And then what we normally see with those type of funds is that they're really underweight or missing certain asset classes, exactly as Tom had mentioned. So you've got your small cap, your value, your developed international, your emerging markets. All of those asset classes are generally underweight in those large index total world funds. So it's really important to have, especially as you've accumulated assets, to have that balance between those different asset classes, because some of those, first and foremost, have been some of the most productive asset classes historically. And not to mention having the different allocation will be able to reduce your risk of your overall portfolio over the long run. So at this point in your life, it probably makes sense to have a more robust, more diverse portfolio, and at least having somebody take a look, get a second set of eyes, on the portfolio to make sure that, you know, you're well diversified. But exactly as Tom had mentioned, that's one part of it. That's the investment management. The other part of it is, are we being as efficient as we possibly can with your accounts, with the investments within the accounts? So that's something I would definitely have somebody talk to somebody, just find out if you're on the right path, if you should be saving more towards maybe kids' college or more in the Roth account or more in the pre-tax accounts. Answer those types of questions.
Yeah, here I was worried about Don retiring. Roxy could slide right in. That was a great answer. Very good. So you can see that you're probably at a place where some professional advice would help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and the second part to David's question is about his mortgage. So he asks, am I crazy to pay off my 2.75% mortgage rate early? I plan on working as long as I can, but I'd like to have the option to retire or at least stop working nights, weekends, holidays when my youngest leaves for college in 15 years. My thought is that if it makes it cleaner, of course, less optimized, plan to try to line up paying off my house when she leaves for college. So 2.75%.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you already know the answer. What I'm going to say is, yeah, I think you are crazy. I mean, 2.75% is cheap money. You should be saving it and growing that for liquidity in the future, because money that's paying down that mortgage, is you're not going to be able to use that to pay yourself in retirement, which probably still feels like a long way off. So I think that's a no-brainer, just to pay that as it goes. But what's your take on that one as well?
I 100% agree. Of course, having a plan in place where you can actually look at your cash flow over the next 15 years and then in retirement will give you the added confidence to know that, yes, it makes sense to not pay that down anymore. But generally speaking, 2.75%, I mean, I can't find that right now.
No, you can't, unless you can assume someone else's mortgage. Great questions, David. Thank you very much for listening. And guess what? The great news here on Talking Real Money is, we have more questions. Roxy, what do you got?
Okay, question number two. Marvin from Carrollton, Texas. Tom and Don, please discuss the Guyton-Clinger withdrawal strategy. Thanks for all you do.
Yeah, so I took a look at this, and this is, by the way, there is no one check-the-box perfect withdrawal strategy. The only one that we know for sure will be correct is after you're dead, then we can say, yeah, that was right, or no, it wasn't. That's the only one we're going to know for sure. So, all right? So get that kind of out of your system, that there's one pathway, one that will work. Excuse me. So this particular strategy, however, is a guardrail type of strategy. In other words, you make a little more money, you get to live a little richer. You make a little less money, you take out less from your portfolio in a general sense. I know there's some more specifics to it than that, but it kind of feels similar to the strategy that we've espoused for many years, and that is a flexible withdrawal strategy. For example, you've heard of the 4% rule, where your money should last. If you only take 4% out of the portfolio every year, and you got to remember, by the way, the money's got to be invested. You got to have some stocks in there. You got to have some bonds in there. Can't just be sitting in cash, even though that's paying you well today. Hasn't in the last 10 years. So that's a permanent kind of fixed portfolio, if you will, withdrawal strategy. We've said most people are okay with taking a little bit more one year, a little less the next year, having it flexible. And with that, you can move up to 5%. You could take about 5% of the portfolio rather than the 4, but you got to live with great times in, 2000, 2006, that kind of thing. And the bad times that come with 2008, 2000, spring of 2020, the 2022, when you had stocks and bonds that went back down. You got to live with all those things. So some people don't want the flexibility, but this strategy appears to be one that offers some of those sort of flexible aspects to it. I would suspect that the survivability, therefore, is better. Your take?
Well, I like the idea of the flexible withdrawal strategy, but some of the things that I don't like about it is that it's easier to tell people, hey, let's increase your expenses, than it is to tell them to decrease their expenses. So I like the idea of having a more consistent approach. And part of the thing that people don't realize is when you're doing financial planning, there may be years where you're withdrawing 6%, 7%, 8% of your portfolio in the years, let's say, before you take Social Security. And with this type of rule, you would generally think that's not okay, but your plan could still be really successful drawing that much early on, especially once Social Security hits, if that rate drops down to 3-4%. So I think it's not a bad strategy, but the best strategy is to have a good financial plan where you actually look at year by year and what you plan to take and see if that works over the long run.
Yeah, and that gets back to sort of being flexible, right? I mean, because things do change in your life. I had a plan at 50, had to rewrite that entirely, and it all worked out, or has worked out at least so far. My situation is always fluid, right? I have a daughter that's still got to go to college. I got to cover some of that cost. There's other things. So it may change my retirement date, which I don't really have at this point. So I love the flexibility. I'd still like guardrails to say, don't ever spend more than this, and here's the least amount you could spend. So I think there's some flexible things about retirement that really do make sense. What else we got?
Okay. So from Nancy in La Mesa, California. Hi, Tom and Don. Recently, you indicated that you didn't think the Vanguard Advisor Services was worth the fee. My husband and I have stayed invested during good and bad markets. We've steadily saved and maxed out our retirement savings. I update my spreadsheet about 2 times a year because I like doing it. Our income meets all our needs even before taking Social Security. We have had long-term care policies for nearly 20 years that seem likely to pay out if we need them. I believe we are set up pretty well. So why did I want to use the service? First, our portfolio is more broadly diversified with low-cost funds and rebalanced if it falls outside the parameters. Rebalancing has been a particular challenge for me. And second, my husband has never been much interested in our finances. I'm the one who has done all the work and taken the initiative, which makes me think he'll be better off with the management being automated, so to say, should something happen to me. I can't think of a less expensive way to accomplish these two goals. Do you have any other suggestions that don't cost 1%? Thanks for all the knowledge you so kindly share.
Yeah, I think this is spot on. I mean, and this it gets back to what kind of experience you want to have. So Vanguard has, yes, this advisor services that only charges 0.3, about 0.3% a year to manage. And if you hire somebody like the firm that we work with, it is 1. So there's a difference there. But the experience is far different, okay? But this is for every individual to decide. The reason we've gotten down on Vanguard is, for one, we look at the portfolios that they use, and they're fairly basic. And I don't know that, again, Nancy, and you've taken this upon yourself to have some knowledge about this, I don't know that you couldn't do that on your own. Maybe the rebalancing would be a little bit difficult for you, so you're saying I'll pay them for the rebalancing. Number two, we find them to be not as deep a planning as we would like to see. There's many things in retirement that could help you reduce your tax bill, that could help you leave more money to others. There's things that beyond just the portfolio design, the rebalancing and the withdrawals that make that up. And that's the third part of all this is truly from what the reports that we get is this is not as personal as having your own sort of financial advisor who's there for you all the time. I'll give you a great example. I just talked to somebody earlier this week. 3-year performance hasn't been very good because 2022 was horrible and they were considering making a change. I don't know that you get very much of that at Vanguard where we sort of talk them off the cliff and say, really, here's a reason to think about this in a longer term sense. Don't make a move. We know the people end up who move their money around end up with less of it. I mean, it's just the way it appears from the studies. So again, there's nothing wrong with the Vanguard service. It's just not as thorough, perhaps not as planning centric. And the other thing I didn't really mention was at the Vanguard service, you just get Vanguard funds, right? Because that's what they're going to use. Nothing wrong with Vanguard funds, but I'd rather be with somebody who's independent who can use anything. Because if you look at the portfolios that we use for our folks, I think there is some Vanguard there. There's some Avantis, there's some Dimensional, there's some iShares. We're trying to use sort of best of class in each one of those situations. You really don't get that at Vanguard. But anything Vanguard does, they do well. I just think it's a different approach. That's how I'd put it.
I agree. I think it's just important. What I tell people is you should just know what you're paying for. So for Nancy, it sounds like to her, it's a good value and that's fine. But I think it's important to remember that, like, if something were to happen to you, whenever, you know, if your husband needed to reach out to Vanguard, he's going to get a different person every time who has no idea what your situation is like, is really not personalized. And maybe there is some money left on the table because we're not doing some, you know, tax saving strategies or making sure that your portfolio is working efficiently for you. So it's just a matter of what you need and what kind of value you're looking for.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer, as all of your answers have been. I got one for you, though, now, because this, I just read this in the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago, which I find fascinating because a few years ago, it was all about ESG, right? Environmental, social, governance funds. Everyone was investing in them. I think at one point they said about half of the assets globally would have some ESG component to them. It was all about that. And then silence, nothing, crickets. You just didn't hear about them. So today, by the way, the percentage of new funds, this is from the Wall Street Journal, in the U.S. and Europe with ESG in their name fell to 3.3% from a peak of 8.3% just 4 years ago. And then they get into some of the what they think the reasons are. One explanation, like they said, is the collapse of clean energy stocks most readily associated with the ESG movement. Of course, that means people are going to move out of those stocks because they haven't done as well. I want to be in the things that go up, even though I want to do what's right. But Roxy is, and you don't know that from being listening to the podcast, but she's a couple years younger, maybe more than a couple years younger than me, a lot of years younger than me, different generation. What is your take on ESG? What do you tell people when they call and ask about ESG? Or how do you think we should view the environmental, social, and governance funds in a general sense?
Yeah, I think in a general sense, especially, you know, talking to people in my generation, we're really, really concerned with where the money that we're spending is going. Are the values of these companies aligned with my values? Like, these are all great things that people are thinking about now. The problem that I'm seeing is that even though we want to invest our money in companies that align with our values, the lack of, I guess, regulation in ESG and the lack of, you know, transparency with companies and exactly how they relate to environmental issues, social issues, governance issues, it's just not quite where we want it to be. And so maybe that's part of the reason why money hasn't, you know, it's kind of moving out of ESG funds. A lot of people are saying greenwashing is a big concern. Yeah. I mean, and this comes up not just...
I go home and bathe with my money every night, so I know all about greenwashing. I'm good with that.
But this isn't a concern just with ESG. I mean, people talk about that with the products they're using. They think that their product is good and healthy, and then they find out that maybe it's not as healthy as they were advertising. So it's similar idea here, but I do think there's some good news on the horizon. It seems like we're moving in a positive direction. It seems like from a regulatory standpoint, the SEC has begun proposing new rules, you know, related to climate-related disclosures, adopted new rules that may require funds to disclose more information. And so that's looking like we're moving in the right direction. From a consumer standpoint, it seems that there is demand for these ESG-focused funds, and, you know, investors are really pushing companies to be more transparent about what they're doing. So that's a good...
Here's my my problem slash issue is your ESG is one thing, my ESG is a different thing. I mean, for example, now I have tried consciously to reduce my carbon footprint by, let's say I have an electric mower now. I have an electric outdoor, you know, weed eater. I have a hybrid plug-in car. I'm trying to do what I don't know how big a deal that's going to be, but I still fly airplanes, so it probably blows out any. But I have not invested in ESG funds per se. I am in a non-traded ESG type of REIT to try to do my little part. But I couldn't tell you, if you walked in the door and said, I want to be an ESG, what that means anymore. It's hard to put your finger exactly on that. So I think that's a struggle for people. Yeah.
And I think also looking at the different funds available, so Vanguard's approach to how they pick the companies in their ESG fund will be different than how iShares picks the companies in their ESG fund. So I think just it's hard right now because there's not a lot of consistency. I think we need a little bit more regulation. I think making sure that we're having these conversations with people when they want to get into ESG portfolios, what exactly does that mean? And hey, I have a handful of clients that are in ESG and they love it. And you know, not everybody asks about it, but you're still invested in a broadly diversified portfolio and the values are more in line, let's say, with what they want compared to your standard portfolio that has everything in it. So I don't think it's a bad option.
And I'll tell you what's been a good option is having you on the program today. You've done a great job. Your comments are spot on. And I appreciate it. We will do this again.
Okay.
You can count on it.
Sounds
by
like
the
fun.
By the way, if you want some help from us, Roxy be one of the people you talk to. You simply go to talkingrealmoney.com, click on Meet an Advisor, and ask us for whatever kind of help you want. We provide that. We review your portfolio for free. We'll give you some advice for free. There's no obligation. There's no big sales pitch, if you will. So take advantage of all of that. And as I mentioned earlier, we're always here to answer your kind of one-off questions as well. You can send those through the website. You can speak them because Don loves them, doing them on Fridays as well. So our job is to help make you a better investor. I hope that happens every time you listen to the podcast. Sounds from most of the comments we get, unless it's about Bitcoin, that's true. But otherwise, that's kind of the general comment we got. So we want to continue to do that as very best we can. So I want to thank Roxy Buttner again for joining us today. You've done a great job and
thank you.
Fabulous. And next time you tune in, yes, Don will be back here. Maybe I'll be back here. Maybe I won't. But, you know, we're always going to be here just helping you by continuing talking real money.
The opinions and views expressed on this podcast were current on the date recorded. Opinions, estimates, forecasts, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions constitute our judgment and are subject to change without notice, including any forward-looking estimates or statements which are based on certain expectations and assumptions. Although information and opinions given have been obtained from or based on sources believed to be reliable, no warranty or representation is made as to their correctness, completeness, or accuracy. Information presented on the podcast is not personalized investment advice from Appella Wealth. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for everyone.
This podcast does not identify all the risks, direct or indirect, or other considerations which might be material to you when entering any financial transaction.
Past performance does not guarantee future results, and profitable results cannot be guaranteed. We hope you realize that the information provided on Talking Real Money is for informational, educational, and hopefully enjoyable purposes only. The podcast is not trying to get you to buy or sell any financial products or securities. Instead, the program is provided as a public service by Appella Wealth, a fee-only registered investment advisor.
Please see Appella Wealth's ADV Part 2A on our website for information regarding Appella's fees and services.
Appella Capital, LLC, DBA Appella Wealth, is an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The firm only transacts business in the states where it is properly registered or excluded or exempt from registration requirements. Registration with the SEC or any state securities authority does not imply a certain level of skill or training. Appella does not provide tax or legal advice, and nothing either stated or implied here should be inferred as providing such advice. Thanks for listening, and please visit TalkingRealMoney.com for more information and important disclosure related to performance of any specific index or fund quoted in this podcast.
And the lawyers get richer.